The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, popping eye sockets, and need a high tolerance for all of the above and more. Viewer's discretion is advised. And I saw like a Dodo's video on Karen the Emo and I'm like melting inside. Oh my god. Hello and welcome to the 13th episode of In the Memory of the Goldfish. And this week, it is so cool. I've been watching animal videos the entire week because I was so freaking sad. But now I'm fine because I ended up reading about this amazing murder house where 8 people died. And it's called the Villisca Murder House. I thought it's gonna be a murder where like a lot of eye sockets popped out. But unfortunately, it was not. Or fortunately, I do not know, I sound like a creep, do I? But whatever, this podcast is all about finding the dark side of the humanity. And we have crossed 1,000 listeners. And there's one person called Mr. Poopy Butthole, I believe, on Overcast or somewhere who like gave me a review. And I was like, yes. And we are also soon going to be having the first listener validation episode. And contrary to my expectations, I already have one story which was sent to me by, I've forgotten the name, but you'll know the name in the listeners episode for 100%. So yeah. All right. Today's intro was rather fast. I realized that I need to speak slower. That's like the first thing that we need to do in podcasts. And I mean, talking about podcasts and this podcast in general, whatever. You know, people go to a lot of extents to get popular, but in today's fishy news, it's gonna be taken to another, like people are going places, walruses are going places. So the first news that I've gotten for you is, I do not remember the source. Of course, the link would be there somewhere, so you'll be able to find the source. So student legally names himself after a fish in exchange for 176 euros of free sushi. So, I mean, there's a very high chance that this news is about me, but I don't think koi fish is actually used in sushi, but whatever. So if you did not know yet that I am Koi. Wait, I forgot to introduce myself. Wow. I am Koi. I am the 11th soul half celestial and my name's not Koi. I mean, it's a fish. It's a whole pun around the name, like the Koi, the name Koi on air. Like it's dying. That's losing its memory. So it's in the memory of the goldfish. The Koi is not technically a goldfish. It's blah. In case you didn't notice so far, you're pretty well. Stupid? No, you're not stupid. I should not call listeners stupid, but you are something. And talking about people like you, back to the article. So the name of the guy is Zhang Yu Ji Ming, which like he changed his name to this, which translates to Zhang Dream of Salmon. And he has like used all his chances and he has used 2 quotas of changing his name and now it's permanent for him. His name is Salmon forever now. And yeah, and like I do not want you guys to change your name to Koi because I mean I'm so adorable and I'm so amazing. And today I think my voice sounds very sexy, so that's a plus. But please don't change your name to Koi. I am pretty unique and I love that. Now, like addressing the news seriously if one can, though it was cute that it was basically marketing strategy by the restaurant that you'll get free sushi if you change your name to Salmon because so fun, right? If we keep on doing this, it's gonna cost a lot for the government because it costs it creates unnecessary paperwork. You need to change a lot of things, you need to waste a lot of time. I mean, people grow up. We are not kids anymore. I mean, says the guy who named himself Koi for a podcast. But still, it's not legal and you guys cannot find me. You cannot dox me so I can say any kind of bullshit that I want to. The second one, and it's so adorable. Did the iceberg carry Arctic walrus to Ireland? This was, I believe, in Toronto Sun. And, well, it's interesting to say the least. Now, in the article, it reads, an Arctic walrus ended up in Ireland after possibly taking a nap. How did the walrus get so far from his home in North Pole? Just imagine, like seriously, you're a walrus, you are sleeping peacefully and someone comes and tries to wake you up and you're like, no, mom, let me sleep. Or like you are like, oh fuck, I don't have a mom. No, I don't even have a home. Oh fuck, are they recording me? Fuckness, goodness gracious, these imbeciles, they are recording walruses sleeping naked. And wow, that's porn right there. These people should be, like, you know, arrested. Now, this guy called Kevin Flannery from the Dingle Ocean World Aquarium. Now, calling an ocean world Dingle, I already judge him. Told the Independent, actually, it was not Orange Sun. Told Independent that the walrus was actually a juvenile. I mean, what's wrong with juveniles? I need to overact on this. Let me throw something, I don't know, which will not break. I'm not able to find anything that will not break to overact. Imagine that I overreacted like I reacted during the Trump news once upon a time. Go back to that episode to know this. And I mean, what's wrong with juveniles? I mean, there was a snake which was a juvenile who was going places. Now it's a walrus who's like doing shit. And I'm not a juvenile, but still, a juvenile named himself for the podcast. I'm making this too much about me. I should stop doing that. But it's a podcast about me, so I probably should. Oh my God. I'm such a diva. I'm allowed to be, and you're going to listen to it because it's fun. Or is it? Even if it's not, you're still going to listen to it because I'm fun. I'm hot. Oh. I mean, think about this news. It obviously talks about climate change, and I do not know what's the distance between Ireland and North Pole. So, yeah. And this made me realize that all my notes, I should have read my notes before starting the thing, because I could have gotten like some props which I could have thrown on the walls to make like extra sound effects. So like, voila, a sound effect for you, because I heard that you guys liked that shit. Not shit, like that act. Anyway, talking about drifting to continents and among other seamless transitions, let's go into Out of the Blue, because you came out of the blue. The walrus came out of the blue as he was floating. I ruined the transition, but it's fine. So last time, if you haven't heard the previous episode, go back, listen to it in the Out of the Blue. Like, just get out of here, pause it. I'm gonna be waiting for you for like 3 seconds such that you can come back. So it was all about time travel conspiracy theory. So travel back into time. So waiting for you. One, two, three, four. Back into the story. Back into Out of the Blue. So the last time I left you at the cliffhanger, which I'm so proud of, that the entire theory is also somehow related to Elon Musk. Well, not basically him, the man behind his company, Nikola Tesla. So if you remember Andrew Basiago, I've forgotten his name. So Mr. Basiago is the guy who basically went on to say that time travel exists, teleportation exists, CIA just hid it. And he said that he was transported to at least 8 or 9 different locations. And one of the most important ones, for according to reports, is, or according to me from what I could research and know, was the home office of Tesla. Now, if you know anything about Tesla, you would know that he died very unexpectedly, and he used to work at his home. And when the police arrived there, which was after the FBI reached, they all his paperwork, all his patented projects, everything just disappeared. There was literally no paper. Like, there was some paperwork, but there was no real paperwork of his new inventions and such in his office. And how weird is that? He died in his office. The US government became there first, came there first, the FBI, CIA, whatever. And a couple years later, like, he died in 1948 or something, like in the 1900s, like early 1900s, mid-1900s rather. And like about a decade after that, US like jumped, I'm not even kidding, like quantum leaps into like front of science and everything. So I'm like, yeah, bloody thieves, that's what you are. My voice sounds so hot today. At least it sounds very hot in my mind. Yeah, Maybe because I ate something like really spicy today and it's like kind of, it has that sexy treble. If you disagree with me, please do not say that my voice does not sound good, because it does. I know it does. Don't rain on my parade. Now, anyway, Basiago said that when he went to his office as a child of age 6, he saw blueprints of experiments and equipment which were actually there in 1971. And like, for all smart people from, and some people who also asked me to justify, why did anybody decide to throw a 6-year child in a time travel prototype? And there were some people who lost their limbs, like people, I mean children, who lost their limbs and such, all right. So basically the father of Andrew, who also worked at CIA as like the engineer or something, had a major hero complex, and he wanted his child to, like, you know, solve the world and shit. So whoosh, the child go become the, I don't know, next time traveler, whatever, Doctor Who, and voila. So like the basics of toxic and dangerous parenting. And oh, also Basiago said that he even went to the Jurassic era, and like, that's the only part of this story that I feel believable, that he went to the Jurassic era, and that's about it. He also said that the biblical records of Jesus hanging and such was actually right, and some mumbo jumbo about holographs, and that that he recorded the video of it and it was used as an holograph at a later, like, you know, at this point I actually stopped like taking proper notes of this, because I started to lose interest in it, as this guy also ran for president because he saw himself being elected as a vice president. But that's also kind of counterintuitive if you go like being a crazy person who's like, oh my god, I went to Mars, I like time traveled, and like your chances of becoming a president like decreases by a lot. So there's that. And now the voice in me, which keeps on saying that this is a lot of bullshit, became louder despite my last week I kind of believed in. This week I'm like, no, this really does not make sense, so I'm gonna like cover it just for the sake of covering it. Now, he also said that all records from 1971 to 2045 was taken into account. And he said when he was in transported to 2045, he was in a building made of emerald and tungsten steel, and that 2045 was a time of peace, climatic, the weather stability and stuff, like bullshit. And now, I mean, things are like, how can a 6-year-old even remember all these things? Now he's like 40 or something, I think. He was born in 1971, not 1970, 60. Like, he's old and he still remembers all those things. And I do not remember shit from my first semester in college. Like, I do have the memory of the goldfish, and I have named myself Koi, but still. Now, the bits which like made me again like get back to it was this, that there was this thing called Corona Vision, whatever, and I kept on reading at coronavirus because I really don't read things properly, and so I was like, what? Oh my god, that. So I was like, so, and because of that, I again went into researching it, and then I found some couple interesting things. If it's true, then it's like, what? But if most probably it's not. So basically, Corona Vision was a kind of device which was used by the government to record and watch past and future events into DVDs, cassette players, and whatever was the high-end technology of the time. I mean, though I do wonder how such a goggles thingy would work, like, that is the government, do they have like cameras placed everywhere throughout in the entirety of the world in all the possible timelines which they record and then they store, or do they hack the cameras in front of my laptop or in your phones or something, and then that's what they saw in 1971? But considering it was 1971, it is kind of, you know, over and extra. But then also they had allegedly had teleportation and time travel at 1971. So, I mean, why, what, who, how? lots of questions, okay? And also all of these things that I'm saying, he has not just said these, he has written all of this in his legal affidavit, and he's a lawyer, so he knows what is the burden of that. And the reason why he said that is because they also knew about 9/11 back in 1971, all right? And which basically makes me point that maybe CIA is the Mothman. And go back to, I believe, the sixth episode, and it's called Upsy Daisy, whatever it's called, for more context. And I also had to tell you that I finally started to number my episodes as like season and episode, and in brackets, yes, it's written T, which means true crime, and it's written P, which means paranormal. So this one's a P episode, okay? And yeah, like he released his affidavit after 9/11. It was kind of his trigger that they knew about all of these things, but they could have stopped it, but they did not. So many people died because CIA was being stupid or something. But it could also like create other shifts in the timeline and make things even worse, because like 2045 seems like a year of peace, so maybe I won't die because of corona or something, because I'm the only one who can possibly make peace in the entire universe. Okay. And so he released his affidavit 1 year after 9/11 because he had enough of CIA being bitches. Now, in his affidavit, he also says that all children, a lot of teenagers who were recruited were actually the future presidents, and the CIA told them that they will be presidents and cultured them according to it and give them classified information when they were teenagers, which is most probably not a very good idea. I'm pretty sure they did a very, very, very bad job at Donald Jr. Trump. So yeah, and thus it brings me to the fact that how Obama was sent to Mars, and because why not, like, the facility which sent Obama to Mars is allegedly in LA, like dramatic much. They can, you know, send people there and using these teleportation devices instead of wasting so much money on NASA. Like, not that putting money to science is a waste, but if you have a better, cheap alternative, send it through that. Though, the fun thing about this entire thing is that nearly 100,000 people were sent to Mars through this project, and only 7,000 survived, according to his data and some of the other people who came out with the same theories, like the Mars project. It's also like Mars project is a connected one to Project Pegasus, but it is also a complete different set of this conspiracy theory. And so almost 100,000 people went, and only 7,000 survived. So like nobody really noticed over 90,000 people just like poof disappearing. I mean, this makes me go back to maybe CIA fucks up, and whenever they fuck up, it's a new missing person, and that's where you're never able to find out. So yeah, now this is where I'm gonna stop. There's a lot more to it, but it only gets ridiculous, and I really don't want to waste your time on all that things that I personally even do not believe in. So yep. Okay. So that's going to be that. Now we're going to move to another rant of mine. Not rant, kind of rant. The story, which in today's day and age is called ice. Now, as I told you, it was supposed to be ice sockets. I really, really, really thought that this was the story which had ice sockets popping out. But unfortunately, it was not. Now I have to find which one exactly it was. So anyway, the story is called Eyes, and the time that I've given, which is also historically accurate, is 9th June 1912. Now, I'm in the story. The elements are picking themselves up now. The ashes from my cigarettes are rising. The splinters, they rotate around me. I know I'm being put to test. Just like Job. Now, a segue. So, I know it's pretty soon to have a segue. So, reference to this is that one of the, like, you'll know later that this had, like, something to do with a priest, and I took this opportunity to make an entire story bashing Christians, because I'm me. So, the reference to this is, to the Job thing is, that once upon a time God made a bet with Satan that Job, one of his good, blameless men, who was very faithful to him, would remain faithful to him if God decided to kill all his family for no good reason. It was in Job 2:2:3, New Revised Standard Bible. So God's kind of bitch, you know. But anyway, so this man thinks that he's also being put to a test like Job. Okay, I continue with the story. The floorboards beneath me seem to now feel like sand. My body sifts out of them and falls right into its rightful place. Down on the ground, like the cigarette splinters in the attic. The splinters here light up the axe. As soon as I touch it, this unknown energy runs through me. I hear the door open. I know it's time. The time will be soon. With the splinters, I rise back up, back to the place closest to the Lord. Upon reaching, I look at the stars twinkling, the moon waning, the owls hooting. Oh, what a melody! I glide with it quietly and lightly. I glide like the breeze, which lifts up, which lifts the leaves up, and I rotate and I glide. You know, this feels so romantic. Like I actually saw like the cigarette splinters gliding all throughout when I was traveling somewhere and somebody threw like an unburned cigarette on the freeway or highway, as normal people call it. So those splinters kept on making a tornado of sorts, and it was the prettiest thing that I've ever seen in my life. Though Candle Lake really, I think, can be dangerous. I'm not sure. I'm not an engineer, though I'm studying engineering. Continuing with the story. In my ecstasy, oh my god, I glitch. I lost the track of time. The moon was at its horizon. The rancid snores had filled the air. I descended to the lower stage. In front of me laid a marvelous gate. It's supposed to be a marvelous door, but laid in gate kind of rhymed so that. In front of me laid a marvelous gate. A gateway to perhaps my ascension, to prove my worth, strife, and wine. It's, I guess, to prove my wine and bread. So there's some idiom which I tried to like mix up here. The door opened with a little sound. If there was any, there was with a little sound. Even if they were to listen to it and wake up, there's little they could do in front of God's will. I spread my legs, shoulders apart, held the axe tightly with both my hands. Oh, I held my axe tightly with both my hands, but they still ended up leaving. Too sad that I do not have an axe. And I'm also kind of hungry. Not for an axe, but like in general. So he held the axe tightly with both his hands. Took the deepest breath I've ever taken in life. Heaved it up, how he usually did it, and swung it down. He, in this case, is the man who's gonna die, just for like reference. And I swung it down. Is that correct English? I'm not sure. Sounds of cracking bones and flowing brains. I would love to listen how brains flow out, like, though I am a vegetarian and I really don't want. Just to make myself even more weirder, I believe. His eyes bounced out like a little ball and it went onto her face. She made some noises, how saying that she has to wake up early to do things. But I thought that it was right for me to be done with everyone first and then come back to this. I swung it up again. The axe somehow rotated in my hands. As I realized that it did. The blunt end had already kissed her face. This, however, felt all the more natural. I gave it another shot, and splutch. A little bone of a jaw jumped at me. This made me remember how children played with insects. Their jumps, their noise, their shatter, and the insect's slimy goo. Good Lord, I cannot look at children playing innocently again. Not that I ever liked looking at children while playing innocently. Good Lord, I'm not a pedophile. What is this podcast doing to me? I've talked about the cat licking my balls, which he does not. I am now being a pedophile somehow. I was about to say my name. Oh, I am very sleepy. It's 3:30, you know. And I'm going to be awake till 6 to, not really. I'm going to be awake till 6 doing nothing really. Just procrastinating. So I continue with the story. I walk out of the room, making sure my feet made little noise. I walk into the other one. Two cots. They've aligned each on the opposing wall. They take so much space. They could allow others to live here instead. I went there and I swung the axe to the first one. That was me yawning while I was reading, if in case you did not notice and if you did not. I swung the axe to the first one. He went away quietly and peacefully. When I hoisted my axe up for the second one, it made a thud on the roof. That was not good, but nobody really noticed. I swung it down and his face became one with the cot. How uniform, how polite. And there are constant goosebumps on my face as more and more people are getting killed. My eyes caught the glimpse of me in the mirror that laid up front. It wasn't looking good. I took the sheets off them. They won't be needed anymore. And I covered up the mirror. It had little use now. I walked back into the room that I started. The blood was flowing everywhere, like the fountain of youth. Stop it, guys, stop it. Stop yawning. It felt as if all was going to be beautiful and ripe. Once touched by this beautiful holy wine. I should not write beautiful so many times. It's kind of wrong. I kicked the vine holding shoe away. The vine was always meant to flow. I took my axe and I smashed it again. Both times. In both their faces. His other eye also sprung out. How fun. Another 40 or so strikes, and I saw somebody carry a lamp in the distance in the fields. Oh, I ought to rush it now. Yes, you ought to rush it now, bloody asshole. I ran over the stairs, jumped in the parlor. I knew it was only children here now. I mean, what can they even do? However, there was nobody there. Did they sneak out? But as I entered the room next to it, jackpot. They were too extra than I expected, but it's all right. It is all the part of the grand plan. I swung my axe at the first, the second, the rhythmic thuds and the rhythmic sounds, the squish, and the hurrah of my heart. The third one was so little. I first hit the pillow and the axe bounced right back at me. It was almost like a trampoline, you know. I do not know why that made me shout, but I did shout, though I did do the deed with the little one too. Excuse me. I was distracted by the mirror again. It was hideous. Oh my god, my goosebumps are not letting me speak anymore. I'm not sure why I'm goosebumping out so much today. I did write the story. The fourth one woke and she started to run. What a witch. She could run around when there's so much death. I will do yours fast and quietly if you stop running, I promise. I said politely. The witch just screamed and started to run. Her stride was weak and short. She only made it to the stairs. I grabbed her gown. Her feet lost balance and she fell there and then on those black stairs. Her underwear was showing. It was a stark white. I lifted her gown up and pulled it down. Pulled the underwear down. She had annoyed me like the fig tree that annoyed the Lord. So this is me trying to again dilute the situation for the ones who do not know about this. So basically Jesus was one fine day walking around and he suddenly became hungry. And he looked at a fig tree which was not bearing fruit at the time. And he decided to curse the tree that it may never bear fruit again because maybe it was not season, you entitled son of a god. I mean, seriously? So he threw like a random tantrum at a tree and cursed it that it may never bear fruit again and the tree dried up and that's like kind of sad. So yeah, this was my way to dilute the situation, which I think kind of worked. So he had, so the girl had annoyed the killer. So as a response, he notes, I buttoned down my pants, pulled them to my knees. Then my stomach roared suddenly. Guess this wasn't the right thing to do. Yes, you need your fucking stomach to roar to know that it's not right to rape a fucking child. I held her leg as she rested unmobile, as if she had already died. I swung the axe another 30 or so times. I wanted to continue writing this story, but I was too creeped out and too annoyed with my own existence, so I did not. So that's about it for the story this time. So, this story, if you haven't read the, I believe, the second episode, they are like kind of similar, so go listen to it. This episode has a lot of, like, go listen to it, peasants. So listen to the entire podcast, it's fun. And it will help me too. So anyway, with this story, so most of the story in this one is like dramatization of what actually happened in real life and little of fiction as such. Okay. And now I'm in like a lot of conflict if I want to give you the true crime part of it or just like, because I really don't want to glide past because it's very fun, but the paranormal one will do. Will have a lot more justice. So okay. So the story is the true life incident or the paranormal incident, whatever, is the Vasila Axe murders or the axe murders in a town called Vasila in Iowa, USA. Okay. So first I'm going to go with the true crime part. I'm going to like cover it up like real, real, real fast such that it like remains because the paranormal part is much crazier. I'm not even kidding. So the victims for the names to the victims are Josiah Moore, his wife Sarah Montgomery Moore, their four children and two house guests, Herman, who was 11, Catherine, who was 10, Paul, who was 7, and Boyd, who was 5. The house guests were Stillinger sisters, Lena Gertrude and Ina May, who were 12 and 9, respectively. So what happened was basically, it was 5 a.m. and the neighbors of the house, like near the house, they like went out and they saw that nobody really was awake in the house. The chicken coop was not open and stuff. So she got a little concerned, but then she was like, so the neighbor was like, okay, maybe they slept in late or something. She was a darling, so she went there, she fed the animals or freed the chickens and whatever like early morning people things do. I mean, I've never woken, basically never woken at 5. So I believe it was around 9 or 10 a.m. when Josiah was usually supposed to leave for work, but he did not, because we know he died now by now, and how he died also, we know that kind of. And so she decided to call Josiah's brother, and he came rushing to the house with his spare key. Now, what he saw in the house is exactly what I described in the story. When he opened the door on the stairs, he saw the body of Lena Stillinger, and her underwear was missing. Her nightgown was up to her waist, which indicated the possibility of sexual assault, and also that probability that she fought back as they were like as what the fuck, axe wound on her arm. Okay. And then everyone else other than her were considered that they were sleeping when they died. And only Josiah, the father of the house, was killed with the sharp end of the axe. And it's considered that he was the first one to die. And everybody else were like bludgeoned with the blunt end. Now, that is also something that I covered in the story. And which is also from like the perspective of an investigator, brings up the story, was he like killed as like an act of passion? That's why he was killed with like the sharp edge, or was this a new killer or whatever? But since it's not a true crime version, I'm not gonna get into that side, okay? And so basically the news of these amazing murders, and you'll know why they're amazing, murders, is spread like wildfire. Doctress J. Clark Cooper with Edgar Hook and Wellesley Irving, the minister of Moore's Presbyterian Congregation, and followed by the county coroner L. Lindquist and a third doctor, F. S. Williams, all came there, all right. And Dr. Williams was the first to actually, go check things out, and he said, quote, and I quote, "Don't go in there, boys. You'll regret it until the last day of your life." But all the Americans, like Americans being Americans, in that too in the 19th century, when they were like just out of the Victorian era, and they loved death basically. They came in, and over 100 curious neighbors, townspeople, they came inside an active crime scene. They looked through the house. They scattered fingerprints all over. They took things, and later you'll find that one of the people took a fragment from Jose Moore's skull as a keepsake, because why the fuck not? Like, I die, I want you people to collect my bones and use them as key rings, because that's so amazing. Okay. And like, it's also weird that the police themselves did not ask the people to leave as such, nor did the doctors and the forensic scientists and such. But it was the armed guards who came in later, like I believe it was the peace corps or something, to like recognize the entire thing, like investigate the entire thing, who came in later, who asked people to fuck right off, and as they had like already contaminated the entire scene by like eight dead bodies, okay? However, with further investigations, this became even more weird. It was proven that the murderer went back upstairs and systematically reduced the head of all the Moors specifically to a bloody pulp after he killed the two little girls. He also drew bedcloths to cover Josiah's and Sarah's shattered heads. He placed a gauze undershirt on Herman's face, a dress over Catherine's, and he even covered the other two's faces as well. He did the same thing to the girls downstairs, and then he toured the entire house. He hung clothes on all the pieces of mirrors and glasses in the house, like to not see his own reflection. Maybe he was guilty or something. I highly doubt that he was guilty, because he also went into the kitchen, took out a 2-pound slab of uncooked bacon from the icebox, most probably with the intention to eat it, as he wrapped it in a towel. But he left it on the floor and just, like, you know, went around doing his own things. He also filled a bowl of water to clear his to clean his hands from the blood. He also even tried to clean the axe, but he was not able to do a very good job at it, and he ended up leaving the axe in the guest house of this, that is the room of the Stillinger girls, for the night. So there were three basic suspects to this. One of them was a priest who was like totally gaga about the thing, and that's why I put in so much Jesus in my story, because there was a priest suspect and it was like the perfect bait for me to bite. And he also read about, like, he also said this Bible verse, "I slay, I slay, I slay," but I was not able to find it, so I did not quote it in the story. I quoted what I could find. All right. And the second one of the other suspects was the old boss of Josiah. Now, Josiah was a very successful businessman, but before that he used to work with somebody, and he also had like an extramarital affair with his daughter or his wife or both. So it was kind of like maybe he asked somebody to kill them. And the third one was a new and upcoming serial killer who, I believe, 10 months later also killed another family nearby. So, yeah. That's about it. Now it's time for the ghosts. My singing skills are on top of the world. I should really stop. I believe I've lost all my listeners now, so it's fun. So I can do basically everything and anything right now. So this is basically, as you could have realized by now, a true crime which happened about more than 100 years ago. This happened on the 9th of June, 1912. Okay. And so the next bit I'm going to talk about comes from this website called frenchparanormal.wordpress.com. And they had such good quality research. I was not able to find such research anywhere. So in case they end up also, like, any of this research is wrong, they are the ones who you gotta blame. And also I'm like giving them credit, because since a lot of the research is taken from their website, I might end up like quoting them as is, and I don't wanna be a plagiarizer or anything. It's 4 a.m. guys, please excuse my tongue for not being able to pronounce any words whatsoever. So let's dive right into the paranormal. So in this house there's like all kinds of paranormal phenomena happening. People getting smacked, stabbed and spanked. Not spanked, I just added it for the fun. There are poltergeists, there are orbs which float from people's mouth and inside people's mouth and stuff, doors which open and close on their own, EVPs and other electronic magnetic thingies, and videos and general audio recordings available. And the best part is that this house has been so heavily researched that all of it is available on YouTube and like other links. I'll link some for you too if I do not forget, or I'll tweet them on my Twitter, so go check that out. Okay. So basically, after the entire charade, it was early in 1930s that this house was rented out to a young couple, Homer and Bonnie. All right, they like moved in, and Bonnie started to get like really weirded out throughout the night because she heard strange noises there. She began to see, oh my god, goosebumps. She began to see images of a man with an axe, holding an axe, looming over the foot of her bed, which is one of the most common sightings. Which also makes me wonder that how is the killer's ghost there? Because the killer, I'm pretty sure, did not die in the house. So is it like a kind of a residual ghost, which is like a sum of of the energy of all the other ghosts which lived there, and creating one energetic mass who acts like a bully and a killer to them, which was like all the negative thingies. So yep. And so yeah, so Homer, being an idiot cis male, did not really believe Bonnie and made like fun or ridiculed of her and whatever. So one night Homer decided that he's gonna stay awake and see what's up. He was awake and he heard sounds of somebody walking up and down the stairs. And it was so unsettling from him that he decided to move out of the house, despite Bonnie like screaming at his face that she was listening to these things before this, okay? Now, the very next day after hearing the voices of somebody walking up and down, he went to the town at the local pool hall, searching for the previous owners of the house to discuss like refunding his deposits, all right? So he, like the bartender there, was supposed to be a very good friend of Josiah, and he took out a cigar box from where there was stuff. And the most important keepsake was Josiah Moore's skull. Yes, people, he took his best friend's skull, who was murdered, and put it in a cigar box, and then put it in at his workplace and showed it to people who was like curious enough. Bloody make a necklace out of it and wear it. Make a pendant or something. Make it a family heirloom, idiot. So, I mean, who the fuck even does that? So, Homer, like, they collected their belongings and left the house immediately. And, yeah. I mean, this couple was so terrified that they decided to live with their relatives. Imagine the amount of horror, okay? So after a little time, there was this Green Giesman family which got the house, and they said that they had some guests over, and they said the door which led to the porch kept on opening throughout the night. Every few minutes they would get up and close it, and it would open again like really after just a little bit of time. It was around 3 a.m. that those guests were seen running down the sidewalks in their night clothes. Okay. We do not know what made them run, but they did. Then there was another family who rented the house between 1963 and 1971, which was basically two girls and their parents, okay? The father was a truck driver and he was gone for like a lot of time. Not parents, like the two girls and the father. The girls would awaken at night and they said that they heard children crying. They would return to their room sometimes and find the drawers with all the clothes out and thrown all over. The parents and the father was like, oh my god, fuck off, like you're being stupid. And one fine day, the father was like sharpening his pocket knife at the kitchen table, and without any explanation, without anything, the knife flew out from his hand and stabbed him in his palm. There was no possible logical way for him to actually have achieved such a feat. So it was something obviously paranormal, and they packed up to leave. I mean, you know, a segue at this to my own life. This reminds me of this imaginary friend of mine I used to call Hannah, who my mother did not believe existed. And when she like confronted me about it, the entire house started to smell like a certain perfume. And the perfume followed my mom, and I'm still getting goosebumps while I'm saying this. I do not know why I'm in such a porcupine today. Okay, and in Malaysia, you know, another segue from the segue. In Malaysia, if some like good smell is coming from somewhere random, it represents a vampire is coming, and you try to ignore it because if you give its existence any importance, it will come latch onto you. Then the final person that the site talked about was Vicky Sprague. And she was all about that. Oh my god, this is not haunted. This is all a crap load of bullshit. Okay. And then when some editor or some journalist asked her to spend the night in 2003, she was like, no, thank you. And she drived away. She was like, totally a skeptic, and I'm pretty sure she's never seen anything in the house. That's why she's so shit scared of staying another night in the house. Okay. And now there are a zillion, and I'm not even kidding, there are a zillion videos on YouTube about the thing that, like, some really, 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 really creepy EMFs. There are some people who went in and stirred the ghosts up using an Ouija board. They took the murder axe there. And when one group asked the ghosts to leave when the session was over, the ghosts said, "Fuck you." And, like, all the collective of them, it was recorded in a sound box or something. You know, soundbox is also allegedly a invention of Nikola Tesla or Thomas Alva Edison or Alexander Graham Bell. Like, one of these smart people invented the ghost box or the spirit box, okay? So, then one woman, she entered a room and she asked if something wanted or someone wanted to talk to her, and it said, "Fuck yeah!" And there was even a ghost hunter who stabbed himself for no explainable reason. Then there was a video on, there's a video on YouTube where the door in a closet opens on its own and closes on its own, kind of in, like, you know, on the command. There's one which is 4 minutes long, there's one which is 10 minutes long. Both are very creepy and very fun. The 4 minutes one is kind of skeptical, the 10 minutes one is more like, "Oh my god." Okay, and in the 4 minutes one, this woman goes, like, which was something that I liked, that she told the children that she knows that they aren't evil, that they do not mean harm and such. And it, she was being a nice lady to them, and it was kind of heartwarming. Okay, now, there was once upon a time that a team spent the night at the house, and, like, there's a lot of reviews on this on Trivago or Travel Advisor, yes, Travel Advisor, and it's fun to read all those, okay? And this is not from there, this is from research, actual research. So, there was a team who spent the night there, and while having a seance, they reported a feeling of heaviness on the stairwell and such, okay? And then, wait. Yeah, and then they click, like, videos and some pictures where floating orbs were seen, and at 2 a.m., like, a train passes through the town of Villisca, and when it whistles, it kind of triggers the residual events of the murder, which makes me think maybe all these spirits are actually residual energies of the 100 people who came in and, like, accumulated thing, and these are not really ghosts and just poltergeists which are activated according to people. Now, ghosts have a lot of classifications. Maybe I'll cover it in one day and out of the blue. Okay. I spoke real fast again. I need to calm down. So basically at 2 a.m. what happens is, when this train passes, they see that a very light fog starts to lift inside the bedrooms, and it moves from one room to another, and once it revolves, removes whatever around the house, there's a sound of dripping blood, like pat pat pat, like a liquid dripping, which can be constantly heard. Now, there was this one group which was in specific, like, chilled the freak out of me, where a male investigator was possessed by the most probable killer's energy. He growled and screamed, and he had claws mark on his back, and the picture of this was also available. And it was recorded during the seance that an orb came out of his mouth when all of this was happening. Okay. And oh my god, this was also so cool that there was this one, this was on Travel Channel's documentary on this, that the ghost said that just kill this specific person and everybody else is fine. And imagine being the specific person, and, like, a ghost is like, just kill this asshole and everybody else will live. And, like, yes, kill him now, kill. So there's that. And people also leave toys for the children to play, and there are yet again videos on this, and there was no draft on the floor. The floor was straight, and, like, some balls were moving, some balls were not moving, and she used to push a ball and used, like, take a proper U-turn, like somebody nudged it back at her, and it used to keep on changing directions. It's all so crazy. So yeah, that's it. That's about it for the story. Like, there were a lot of other things revolving around the exact same things, but I was like kind of uncertain about the authenticity, so I'm not covering them. So please do not scream at me. Okay, yeah, that's it for today, and my throat hurts so bad. So the podcast is hosted by Koi On Air. It's co-produced with Nifix. The music is by Lil Adi and the artwork is made by me. And you can look at the artwork everywhere. I've told you about the T and the C. You can reach out to me on Instagram and Twitter as Koi On Air. On Twitter also, I've decided that I'm gonna put out links to the research, like some of the important parts of it. So go follow me there if you don't want to miss on these amazing things, okay? And yeah, that's it. Bye bye people. Don't stab people or don't axe people or kill people in general. Be nice, be amazing. I love you.